It's Wednesday, August 3rd, 2005. I'm Alan Joyce, and this is the Everything Digital Podcast.
Podcasting almost live.
The Everything Digital Podcast. If it's digital, you're going to hear about it. Unless it's Windows.
This intro music is from 300 Stars. This is Yin and Yang off GarageBand.com. It is the Everything Digital Podcast, in case you forgot, since I did the opener 45 seconds ago. And it's been a good week. It's been a very good week technology-wise. We got a whole bunch of news. Some new features from Flickr, our favorite photo sharing service. Skype Wi-Fi phone, which is to be available soon. A couple other interesting stuff, some Microsoft news. But an extremely exciting piece of news is that Apple has finally released a two-button mouse. Yeah, something we thought they would never do. Finally here, so got a lot of good discussion on that later in the show. But for now, those five-second news headlines. AMD has added a lower-end 64-bit processor to its X2 desktop line, dubbed the 3800 Plus, and running at 2 GHz for $394. Sony recently announced the CyberShot DSC-T5, a 5.1 megapixel camera with a 3x optical zoom, 2.5-inch LCD, and ultra-slim design. British Telecom has plans to drop the prices of its symmetric broadband service, cutting the cost by 30% beginning in 2006. And Sony is planning to release several new games for the PS2, as well as cut prices of the console to around $100 when the Xbox 360 is released. And finally, Black Duck Software has partnered with SourceForge to help companies keep track of licensing requirements when using open source software. And those are just the short headlines. There are, as always, links to the full stories in the show notes at everythingdigital.org. Alright, so first up on the agenda is the Skype Wi-Fi phone that I mentioned earlier. An interesting alternative way to use Skype if you already use the pretty popular voice over IP telecommunications client. First of all, the interesting thing about the phone is there is no computer required to set up the account, to make the calls, to organize the contacts. It's all right there on the phone, so you don't even need to set up anything on the computer. You can just buy the Skype phone, and if you want that to be your main phone, it does not need any sort of external configuration, standalone. Works just like a regular phone, and uses any open Wi-Fi network, taps right into the Skype network, and has the look, feel, and functionality very similar to an average mobile phone. It also lets you sign into your existing Skype account or create a new one right there. Also, contact management is supposed to work similarly to the way it works with Skype on the computer. This information is coming from a sort of preliminary post on the share.skype.com weblog, the Skype developers weblog type post. It is not actually in production yet, there's really no ETA as far as when it's going to be in stores, when you're going to be able to buy it. There's just some prototypes right now that they're testing. A few of the Skype developers have written about their experience with it, and it seems like it's going to be pretty cool when it does come out. But as of now, we don't know cost and we don't know availability. But definitely keep your eyes peeled on share.skype.com, and it should be out soon and should be an interesting new step in using Skype. In the news this week, Microsoft is planning a twice-yearly hacker conference. The conference is going to be dubbed Blue Hat and will allow hackers to demonstrate flaws in Microsoft products, something that usually happens anyway, but now will happen under a controlled environment, which Microsoft, I'm sure, is much more comfortable with. The first meeting was dedicated to Windows security, the operating system, but future meetings will be on several topics for on several different Microsoft products. The Microsoft developers say they benefited greatly from the experience and gained, quote, a new understanding of security, something that they really need over at Microsoft. So the next Blue Hat conference is scheduled this fall. No details yet on what it's going to be about, what product they're going to be featuring and trying to hack through, but no specific date yet. But it is going to be a regular twice yearly thing. Nice to see Microsoft sort of taking the initiative to say, okay, we do have problems in our products, security problems, and taking the initiative to really recognize those problems and allow the hacker community to help them recognize them, a community that in other circumstances they would not want anywhere near their products. But if I think they realize that they can actually help them realize the flaws. And in my opinion, every software company should do this. I mean, it's going to happen anyway. It's not like if you don't talk about your product having flaws, no one will find any. There will be flaws, just will somebody find one and will they post on a website somewhere how to exploit it, and you won't have any control over that and you won't have a fix for it? Or do you want them to do the exact same thing but under a controlled environment, much smarter, where you can actually work on fixing those problems, and you do that by embracing the community that is trying to break through the problems, because they are the most valuable resource if you're trying to up security. So a good move on Microsoft's part, and we'll see how it develops. Hopefully it will definitely lead to a higher security awareness over at Microsoft, something that they really need. Also, the Ford company, Ford Motor Company, and Sirius Satellite Radio has announced a deal. The 2006 Ford F-150 pickup truck and Explorer SUV will have factory-installed Sirius satellite radios for $195. It will include 6 months of service, Sirius satellite radio service, but after 6 months, it is the standard $12.95 a month rate. However, by 2008, Ford hopes to have 90% of their vehicles with Sirius radios as a factory option. Sirius, this is a big deal for Sirius, because with subscribers to satellite radio, they're really the best way to recruit them is to replace their FM radio. That because people right now are used to the FM radio, and if satellite radio can just sort of squeeze in there and take the exact same spot, become the factory-installed option, become something that's just standard in cars, then their subscribers are going to jump significantly. Because if people are buying these cars and it's like, oh, well, only $135, 6 months service, completely replaces my FM radio, and I get all these extra channels and all this special music programming and podcast programming and all this, and I don't even have to hassle with installing it or hooking a device up to my currently existing car stereo, It's just right there. If it's that easy, people are really going to start converting to satellite radio, because that is the future of satellite radio, is to really become that standard option, become even the default option, where like an FM radio is now. You don't say now, cars don't, when you're ordering a car, it's not like, oh, and if you want to pay an extra this, you can get an FM radio in your car. They don't say that now. They used to, and this is how it's working with satellite radio. So in the future, we can assume that satellite radio is going to become that default option, and it will just be probably 6 months or... I have to actually restart my computer. And yeah, big deal. Restart the computer. Well, with a Mac, actually, you do put it into sleep a whole lot and don't restart hardly at all. But I have to actually restart my computer before I do a podcast, or GarageBand starts hanging up on me. It just has to have a clear memory in order to work, in order to record voice. So that skip you just heard there, that was GarageBand freaking out because I didn't restart right before the show. So anyway, Sirius Radio, Ford, definitely a good business relationship there, something that's going to help Sirius to really progress as far as subscriber numbers and general acceptance in the community. Sort of just taking them for granted. They want to be just accepted as something that's supposed to be there, not something that, oh wow, that's a Sirius Radio. That's interesting. You know, it should just be, oh yeah, you know, you got one of those. I got one of those too. You know, and normally companies would want something like, oh wow, that's the Sirius you know, Series 2 radio. But in this case, they actually want it just to be normal, you know, because that means more subscribers, and they don't make their money on being this sort of high end, just for a few people type of product. It's appealing to the masses and replacing and revolutionizing radio. So big step for them. Now, speaking of big steps, Apple has taken a huge step and finally introduced what you might call a two-button mouse. And why I say what you might call a two-button mouse is because it is actually one button. So there is one button on the top of the mouse, and depending on where you click that one button, whether you click it on the left side or the right side, it registers a left or right click. So Apple was able to maintain their usual sort of ergonomic, really clean feel to their mice, but also implement the right and left click. Now, there's also a couple other features to this. First is 360-degree scrolling capability that Apple has also lacked for a long time, in addition to the left and right click. So with the addition to this 360-degree scrolling, they've not only added the up and down scrolling. Say you're on a web page and you can easily scroll to the bottom. You know how a scroll wheel works. But also you can push it left and right to move sideways on the page. So really nice feature. But the problem with this is the way it's constructed is it's a little ball, like a track ball, in the middle of the mouse. Now, not that this would really get in the way, because the way your fingers would go on it, it fits right between them. But if you're scrolling and you want to scroll up and down, I'm not sure how easy it is just to scroll up and down. Does the ball start sliding to the left as you move your finger down it slightly to the left, so you end up scrolling down and to the left? I mean, on a web page that wouldn't make much of a difference, but say you're in like an Adobe Illustrator document. When you scroll down, you could scroll nearly forever in any direction in that document because it's huge. So if you're trying to scroll down and you accidentally just put a little bit of left tilt in it, then you're going to be in a completely different place than you want to be. So I haven't actually tried one in person, but that looks like a danger to me. Don't know if they've got some sort of scroll lock in there, so it only scrolls up and down. It knows when you're trying to scroll up and down, and it just locks it in that axis. Or if it's harder to move it left and right than it is up and down. Not sure about that. I'm going to have to try one in person. So this is just from looking at the pictures of it. The other thing is it has side buttons, buttons on the sort of front side of the mouse, and those are for application switching and other special functions. Not my favorite placement for extra buttons in a mouse, because think about when you hold a mouse, your fingers are on either side right where the side buttons would be. So, well, they're right there to click them, sure. But when you hold it, or at least when I hold it, if you're maintaining a fairly firm grip, you're in danger of clicking the buttons if they're there. And I also like a solid feel to the side of the mouse. So it adds some extra functionality, but I'm saying maybe Apple went a little button happy on this mouse. I guess they've been criticized for so long of being so limited in functionality in the mice. Maybe they just tried to get as much functionality as they possibly could in there. But speaking of functionality, it doesn't have Bluetooth. That means you're tethered to a cord, and for $50, being tethered to a cord is not the best deal. So the Apple Mighty Mouse, the two-button mouse, I don't know if I'll be buying one. I mean, I'd have to try it in person. I'm sure it feels really great to use, because Apple design has never failed in that respect. But I just have a few little problems with it, and I'm not sure how well those are going to resolve when I finally get a chance to try it in person. But overall, the Apple Mighty Mouse, not the best name, by the way, in my opinion anyway. A good addition to the Apple accessory lineup, and something that they've been lacking for quite a while. All right, got some PodSafe music here. This is from Paul Fisher and the Mulligan Kings. This is Paul's 52nd Street Theme. All right, Paul Fisher and the Mulligan Kings. That's Paul's 52nd Street theme. So that skip in the song, that was GarageBand again. Unfortunate that it keeps doing that. I'm just going to pause it and then resume recording here just to get rid of any lag it has. So hopefully it'll behave for the rest of the show. So first item post PodSafe music is that Flickr has a new feature, which I have found very interesting so far, and that is because the feature is interestingness. It is a way of deciding which photos that are posted on each day, which photos from the day are the most interesting. Now, there's apparently a very advanced set of algorithms behind this. A way to determine, based on both the comments and the favorites, the amount of times the picture is favorited, and the amount of comments that are made on it, but also a way of determining who the comments came from and who favorited the picture, and it, I guess a photo gets more interesting points if the comments and favorites came from someone who is not a contact of the person, or not labeled as a family, not family status with the person, or not in a group with the person. If the comments are made by people outside the group, then they're worth more. So simple but very intricate ways of determining. Simple in the respect that all it's really based on is the comments and favorites and views. But within those categories, there's some interesting little ways to differentiate between what comments are make the photo more interesting. You know, what how do you classify whether people are visiting it because it's interesting, or whether people are just visiting it because it's from a person they know. And the Flickr algorithm seem to be doing a very good job, because if you look through the photos that are dubbed the most interesting for each day, most of them are really great photos. You can look through those, and I have, and they are just amazing, some of the photos that people are posting. And there's GarageBand skip again. It looks like a professional photo exhibition is what it looks like. It's really incredible. I encourage you to check it out. There's a link in the show notes. You can also go to Flickr.com or Flickr.com/interesting and check that out. A really great way of finding nice photos. I actually made a little script that I can copy the URL of a photo on the internet, and then I go into the little scripts menu and select the script. It comes up with a box, and it asks me, you know, it has the URL from the clipboard already in there. I just press OK, and then it goes ahead and downloads it to a folder where my system draws its desktop pictures out of. So I can select a photo on Flickr and get it rotated into my desktop pictures, which change every 5 minutes. And so it's a great way. I've been browsing through these interesting photos and just downloading any I like, and it's really, really a great way to experience Flickr. So I really encourage you to go check that out. Yahoo is planning to syndicate TV news clips. Video clips from CNN and ABC News will be available on Yahoo's website in September. Yahoo is apparently attempting to fortify its online news services, which have definitely been lacking, especially compared to Google News, which I really like personally, and which collects news stories from all over any website that submits them. Well, not any website. I tried to get mine submitted, but you need to have a website with multiple users writing the stories. So I don't quite qualify for that. But Yahoo is trying to get their service back up there. And they are making these videos available free. They are supported by ads, but they are the clips that you would see if you turned on CNN or ABC. So just a different way to access them, possibly a more convenient one, although I'm not sure how long they're going to take to download, because if it takes maybe 5 minutes to download the entire clip, and you could instead just turn on the television and look at CNN or ABC News, well, then maybe it's not worth it. But they could really streamline the process and make it worth it. But hey, who wants to watch or listen to professional content anymore, right? Podcasts and vlogs are the new thing. Internet Explorer 7 apparently won't pass the W3C, a Worldwide Web Consortium, ACID 2 standards test. Microsoft acknowledged this in one of its developer blogs, apparently, let's see, well, it was Chris Wilson, the lead program manager for IE, was the one who admitted this, and he said that, quote, "We fully recognize that IE is behind the game today in CSS support," and, quote, "there are some fairly large and difficult features to implement, and they will not all sort to the top of the stack in IE 7. So the ACID 2 test looks for CSS 1, HTML4, and PNG graphics support, and is a way to sort of make sure all web browsers can handle the content that people are starting to put on web pages. And of course, CSS has been around for a while, very commonly used now, and really important that Internet Explorer catches up and implements support for that, because it has been far behind as far as being compatible with GarageBand, with some of the new tags and some of the new specifications of CSS. The Web Standards Project has been fairly happy that Microsoft is finally admitting that Internet Explorer does have problems with with meeting the standards and is looking to fix them. Web Standards Project member Chris Kaminsky says in response to the IE bug fix to-do list, quote, "It's a pretty impressive list for a release that, by all accounts, is primarily about security and UI features." Of course, talking about the Internet Explorer 7 released, which is due to come out, actually already has come out in beta stages, but is due to be released publicly with the release of Longhorn, or now named Windows Vista, when that comes out. So other browser makers, though, are not so optimistic about Microsoft's goals here. Hakon Lee, the chief technology officer for Opera Software, says, quote, "I think they should take the time required to do this right." And also says, quote, "This is their chance to show that they really care about standards, as they've been saying." As far as competitors go, Opera is very close to passing the test. The Mozilla Foundation's Firefox browser is expected to pass reasonably soon, and Apple Computer's Safari browser already passes the ACID 2 test. So that is all the news I've got for today. Just wanted to say I am going to be on vacation coming up for 8 or 9 days, and then I'll be back next week. And that's why I did a show sort of sooner than I normally would from the last show. Gathered as much information as I could and just decided to do a show before I left so that it wouldn't be 2 weeks between shows, or almost 2 weeks between shows. You could get your EDP fix before I go on vacation. I'll have another podcast for you when I get back. Don't know if I'll have much time to collect news when I get back, so it may just be a sort of low-key podcast, and then I'll go from there and see if I can get back on schedule after that. So I'll see you after I get back, and here's some outro music. This is from the Sound Men. This is Extension. All right, so you can post comments at everythingdigital.org. You can subscribe to the Everything Digital podcast only feed at everythingdigital.org/rss.xml. You can subscribe to the podcast and text news feed at everythingdigital.org/weblog/index.xml, and all those links are in the show notes. And I'm going to try to finish this up before GarageBand freezes again on me. My email is alan@everythingdigital.org. My Skype ID is everythingdigital. My AOL Instant Messenger IM name is Podcaster. You can call 206-9-THE-EDP or 206-984-3337 and leave an audio comment. Also, it is $10 for a one-show sponsorship. If there's any sponsors out there that want to sponsor their website or service, just drop me a line via email. And you can PayPal me $10. That's a one-show sponsorship. You can get your name several times throughout the show. Just a little advertisement for you. Whatever you want me to say, $10. Okay, other than that, thanks for listening, and stay subscribed. Oh, please don't freeze up in GarageBand.